Imagine being 16 and feeling like you're practically dead inside while everyone around you seems effortlessly engaged with life. This is Victoria Spring's reality, cynical, detached, and convinced that existence is fundamentally meaningless. She moves through school like a ghost, surrounded by what she calls soulless conformists, maintaining a blog where she can express the sadness she can't voice aloud. "I don't blog for followers," she explains. "I blog because it's not socially acceptable to say sad things out loud in the real world." When mysterious notes lead Victoria to an enigmatic blog called Solitaire, her carefully constructed shell of indifference begins to crack. What follows is a raw, unflinching journey through the landscape of teenage alienation in the digital age, where the line between online personas and authentic connection grows increasingly blurred. Victoria's emotional detachment is challenged when Solitaire emerges at her school. What starts as harmless pranks, Star Wars music over the tannoy, Madonna's Material Girl on repeat, escalates dangerously to office fires, stink bombs, and a life-threatening fireworks incident. Solitaire's activities feel disturbingly personal. Their blog posts contain references only Victoria would recognize, like T.S. Eliot's line, "Do I dare disturb the universe?" that mirrors her existential paralysis. When locked in a classroom and shown a video of young violinists, Victoria experiences emotional stirring she hasn't felt in years. Is Solitaire attempting to awaken Victoria from her numbness? Could it be reflecting her own suppressed destructive impulses? As the pranks become more dangerous, Victoria's emotional barriers begin to fall, compelling her to engage with the world she's long held at a distance. Into Victoria's isolation bursts Michael Holden, a boy with different colored eyes, enormous glasses, and an enthusiasm for life that both irritates and fascinates her. Their first meeting sets the tone. Michael dramatically recognizes Victoria, shouts her full name, and immediately tries to involve her in investigating Solitaire. Michael's compelling quality is his refusal to accept Victoria's self-imposed isolation. When questioned about befriending someone so different, he explains, "There's a time and place for being normal. For most people, normal is their default setting, but for some, like you and me, normal is something we have to bring out." Their relationship develops through unexpected encounters, Michael baking with her 7-year-old brother after a family crisis, or Victoria visiting his clifftop home where they go ice skating, revealing his championship speed skating talent, and watch Star Wars. Michael sees through Victoria's facade. "You like to act as if you care about nothing, and if you carry on like that, then you're going to drown in the abyss you have imagined for yourself." In Victoria's world of perceived fakeness, Michael's authenticity offers a glimpse of a different way of being. Victoria's relationship with her brother Charlie forms the emotional core of her story. Charlie is recovering from a severe crisis involving an eating disorder, self-harm, and a suicide attempt. Though in therapy now, his illness continues to affect the entire family. Victoria feels both fierce protectiveness and unspoken guilt toward Charlie. When he relapses, organizing food obsessively and self-harming, she comforts him while blaming his boyfriend for leaving him alone. Later, she confesses, "I saw him getting thinner and thinner, and I didn't do anything." This responsibility for Charlie's well-being forces Victoria to sideline her own emotional struggles. When her father lectures her about needing to try to be happier, she thinks bitterly that she's been trying for 16 years, revealing how her mental health issues have gone largely unrecognized. The portrayal's power lies in its complexity. Charlie's recovery includes both setbacks and small victories. Victoria's depression, though never explicitly labeled, emerges from a tangle of family dynamics, social pressures, and internal thought patterns. The silence surrounding these struggles reveals how mental health issues ripple through families, affecting everyone differently. Victoria's relationships reveal the complicated nature of teenage connection. Her friendship with purple-haired Becky is probably my only real friend, yet contains unspoken tensions. When Becky has sex with Jack, Victoria fails to show interest, later learning they've already broken up, creating a growing emotional disconnect between them. The reappearance of Lucas Ryan, Victoria's primary school friend, further complicates her social world. Their childhood bond formed when Victoria would quietly sit and read with Lucas when he cried. When Lucas transfers to her school, Victoria's hopes of rekindling their friendship are dashed when he begins avoiding her. These relationships reflect different aspects of Victoria's character. Becky represents the social world Victoria feels alienated from, while Lucas embodies a nostalgic connection to simpler times. Both falter because Victoria struggles with authentic engagement, hiding behind cynicism and detachment. The novel also explores darker social dynamics through Ben Hope, initially presented as universally admired, but later shown confronting Charlie violently about spreading lies, revealing the homophobia and self-hatred beneath his polished exterior. This illustrates how social pressures create both external aggression and internal suffering in teenage relationships. As Victoria becomes increasingly obsessed with Solitaire's escalating pranks, the novel builds toward a dramatic confrontation. The shocking twist reveals that Lucas created Solitaire specifically for Victoria after seeing her playing cards alone and muttering, "I hate myself." What appeared to be a school-wide phenomenon was actually one person's misguided attempt to bring excitement into Victoria's life. During a planned school burning, Becky confronts the conspirators with a powerful rejection of Solitaire's philosophy. "You think you're so intellectually superior. You think sadness is some kind of disease." Despite her intervention, a fire breaks out, creating chaos. Victoria finds herself on the Art Conservation's roof, contemplating jumping, a physical manifestation of her emotional journey. Michael arrives and confesses his own struggles, telling her, "Some people aren't meant for school. That doesn't mean they aren't meant for life." This distinction between institutional failure and personal worthlessness offers Victoria a crucial new perspective. In the fire's aftermath, Victoria experiences genuine connection in Nick's car when Charlie acknowledges her struggles, and they exchange "I love yous," perhaps for the first time, suggesting authentic communication remains possible despite years of silence. Becky's sardonic comment that if this is the best time of our lives, she might as well end it immediately, captures the novel's rejection of teenage happiness platitudes. Solitaire acknowledges adolescence's difficulties while suggesting connection makes these bearable. As the group crosses a frozen river with smoke trailing behind, Becky observes that Solitaire just wanted them to feel they belong to something. "We're all waiting for something to change. Patience can kill you." This reframes the novel's title. Solitaire isn't just about isolation, but about the danger of passively waiting for life to improve. Victoria's concluding thoughts are modest. "I don't know what will happen to our school or to us or how long I'll be like this, but I know I'm here, alive, and not alone." Not a declaration of healing, but an acknowledgement that continuing to exist and maintaining connections represents achievement. Sometimes, simply choosing to remain in the world is the quietest, most powerful rebellion.